Welcome everybody to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
Issue number 12. I am one of your hosts, Nat, and with me today is...
Patrick.
And Kat.
And we are here to deliver all of the awesome comic book, geek culture, awesomeness, basically.
Right.
So yeah.
Awesome.
Awesome.
I'm glad we're all awesome.
It's like Wicked Doc out there.
Yeah.
So I think we're just going to roll right into news. Kat, what do you got for us?
I just have to point out to all of our listeners today that I have a lot of love for you because right now I should be in my house watching Ruby because Ruby starts today, Volume 5, and you should all be watching it, and you have no excuse. Well, I haven't seen all the other ones. Number one, it's on, like, everything. Number two, it's on YouTube, so it's free. Go watch it. I don't care. Like, no excuses. Just go watch it.
Now, where is it?
But, Kat, I have not seen Ruby yet. Why should I be watching Ruby?
Because it's fabulous, and if you... I mean, I don't know. It's so great. It's pretty great. I mean, it started out in a really small company with Rooster Teeth, and then, like, I can honestly say that's probably one of the things that has, like, pushed Rooster Teeth to, like, one of the bigger forefronts, because they, the voice actors for Ruby were actually at New York Comic Con.
Nice.
Yeah, and they had their own billboard in New York. Like, it was kind of insane just to see some of all these different pictures, because I, of course, follow all of them on, like, Instagram and whatnot. I can't not.
You mean you follow them? Just like in real life.
Thoughts cross my mind. Like, I'm not gonna lie, Barbara Dunkelman, who is the voice actress for my favorite character, Yang, like, legitimately, like, a real time hero. Like, if I could meet her in person, well, there may be tears.
Well, you heard it here, Barbara Dunkelman. I know you're listening in, so please come in.
I really
and
hope
Kat's
you are.
Day.
I really, really do.
What is the, like, could you give us a quick synopsis about what Ruby is?
Basically, they are, it sounds silly, but they're going to an academy to learn how to fight the Grimm, which are basically giant evil. Name an animal and put, like, white/bone mask on its face and just black and going to kill you.
Okay.
And so they're learning to fight the Grimm, and I'm just going to stick with Volume 1 synopsis because things kind of teeter into the oblivion a little bit as you move along. But, yeah, so they all make their own weapons, and everything that they have is everybody. I'm pretty sure people have seen, like, different memes for it, but it's also a gun. So, like... Ruby Rose, who's, like, the main character, her weapon is a scythe that turns into a sniper. How can that not be awesome?
That is pretty cool,
actually. And then my favorite character, she has shotgun gauntlets. Like, come on! And then each character has a special aura about them, and Yang's is she gets, basically takes, the more hits she takes, the stronger she gets, but if she gets knocked out, then it's a no-go.
Okay.
Ruby Rose is super fast, Blake can make replicants of herself, and then Weiss seems kind of like she can, I don't really understand Weiss as much. If somebody knows and can explain it to me better, I would appreciate that, but she has the ability to do a bunch of different things with dust. It's very odd, but, and then, like, she has a fencing sword, except hers is, like, a revolver in the middle of it for all of the dust. And then, it's really good, though. Like, I hate saying this because I know that it turns people off, but, like, the first season, like, they were a small company when they first started, so the animation isn't amazing, but the story always made it worth it to me. Because once I started watching the story, because I remember I fought it for so long, I didn't start watching it till Volume 3 was out, and I went through the first two, and I was like, oh my god, this is amazing, we're so stupid for... I was like, oh, well, the art's bad, I don't want to watch it. Yeah, no, don't be like that, it's great. Like, and it gets better as time goes along, too. You can kind of see that they're making more money and stuff like that, so it's kind of nice. Like, it's really funny, though, too, because they also have a side one called Ruby Chibi, and they make fun of the fact that they had no money in the first volume.
That's awesome.
And some of it, and it's great. Like, honestly, like, all the stuff that they put out is always... It's got a lot of humor in it, but... what was it, in Volume 3, I sat in my room and cried for 15 minutes watching that one.
Wow.
Like, it's great. It's
right.
Wonderful.
Cool. So, Ruby Season
Volume 5?
Oh, don't worry. When I watch this episode, I'll be back, you know, next time I'll be back to review that bad boy, because I'm so excited for it.
Sounds awesome.
Wonderful. Alright, what do you got for us news-wise then?
Really just an announcement that's fairly recent that Raven, Daughter of Darkness, a maxi series out of DC Comics has been announced. Written by Marv Wolfman, who is actually the co-creator of Raven, and art by Popmon. This is going to be a continuation of the Raven maxi series from 2016. So yeah, that's an exciting piece of news that they're, you know, he gets to keep writing a character, obviously, that he loves as he co-created.
I never read any of her original comics, so yeah. I'm kind of curious how they're going to do that for people like me who have never...
My understanding is that previous 12-issue, or I think it may have only been 6 issues, the one from 2016.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that there was one from 2016.
Yeah, this is basically a sequel series, so you can grab that trade paperback now and get a feel for what he's doing with Raven right now. So
I kind of imagine it would be a little hard to especially illustrate for that, because I imagine each panel is just like a varying shade of black, you know,
some red. I mean, they have to reference Trigon at some point,
right? Yeah, and then like, you know, there's her face and then just like black for
I figured
like,
it was just like
panels.
The like underneath the nose part and then a face and then the top part was all black again, so that's what I assumed.
The shadows.
Yeah, just all the shadow.
I'm really excited for Popmon doing the artwork. I haven't seen this stuff in a long time.
What else has he done?
He had a spy series. I think it was called Spy Boy, actually, and then
Not Spy Kids.
Not the movie by the director of what the hell? I can't think of it. Sin City. Robert Rodriguez. There we go.
Was that really the same director?
Spy Kids was directed by Robert Rodriguez, so.
My mind's just been blown. Seriously.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, I mean, I know that he did The Adventures of Sharkboy and Lava Girl, so.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, mine is still blown.
But anyway, we were like way off the rails. Popmon also did a run on Ghost Rider, I believe, from the late 90s, early 2000s, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That'll be fun. Hopefully. I hope.
Yeah.
I really hope. It's a short series, so I have higher hopes for it.
Yeah. I like 12 issues are nice.
Mm-hmm.
Just
read it for a year and enjoy.
Yeah.
What else you got?
Well, I got two pieces of news. Should I do light or heavy?
Straight heavy.
Let's go heavy.
So, due to certain events that involved people at a concert in Nevada, Marvel decided to pull they were going to show the first episode of The Punisher at New York City Comic Con, decided that was in bad taste, because the Monday before New York City Comic Con, 58 people were gunned down?
I couldn't tell you the number, because...
I think it was around 60, hundreds wounded and shooting in Nevada. If you didn't hear about this, like, please stop listening to this podcast and actually read some news.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
But yeah, so Marvel decided to not show the trailer for a guy that just kills people with guns after a guy kills people with guns.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be in a little bad... Bad taste.
Just a little bad taste.
Considering it just, like flashed back to him in the, you know, in the prison scene where Defenders and just all the blood, man. Bad taste.
That was definitely a good call on Marvel's part. Right. Like, I understand them going to show it because The Punisher is supposed to come out here in a couple months.
Well, that's the thing, is The Punisher doesn't actually have a date. It's just before the end of 2018.
It's just
2017.
It's like, it's before the end of the year. We're not in 2018.
Yeah.
So,
sorry.
Yeah,
so before the future.
It should be in a couple months here. So obviously, you know, why would they not share the first episode? Because it's pretty much already done before they release it.
I mean, normally I'm not one to really believe in censoring anything, but that one, I'm like, wounds are way too fresh.
There's a big difference, I believe, between censoring and having like morals. You know, like you can always censor something. You can just like put it out there and then be like, well, we're going to put pixels over the penis or whatever, you know, because that's what happens. But like deciding not to do that because of like a certain level of quote morality and taste, and they might just be doing that.
Well,
for, like,
I think it shows that Marvel has a level of sensitivity for what is happening in our culture. to say, because the character is I don't know if it's a celebration of violence or to say that violence begets violence, and
I think it's more like dudes getting revenge and considering that 58 people were just killed and hundreds of revenge is not a message you want to send right now.
No, right, exactly. Yeah.
Not by any means.
Yeah. And it would have been it's a sensitivity of Marvel to say, you know, this is not the right time to do that. And since they don't have a date, they're not beholden to anything to be like, this is going to come out next week.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that could have been the announcement of what was going to happen. So I think kudos to Marvel for actually being like, you know what, we can fill something else in this spot mm-hmm. and we can make an announcement or hold a specific press conference for reviewers to see the first couple episodes of the series.
Yeah, and I'm still interested to see where they take the Punisher, because, like, he, you know, like, in the Daredevil season, he was basically just a foil for Daredevil, but, like, at the same time, I can totally see them taking it. Like, all the Marvel, except Iron Fist, because I'm not including that in anything, all the Marvel Netflix shows so far have had a very interesting, like, thematic arc throughout them, and I'm really interested to see where they take that with the Punisher.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they...
Because they could very easily do, like, a cycle of violence kind of thing.
Right, exactly. And I think has to be kind of where your core concept is. They're definitely going to go deep into his origin from the stuff that's been shown.
Yeah.
So that'll, you know, show how much horrors create horrors create horrific events. So once one happens,
I'm in horrifical.
It's horrifical, guys. That's
the. I mean, like I said, we're still in that heavy moment, so I'm like horrific. I'm in for horrifical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
what news do you have? Yeah.
cool. To attempt to, like, I guess, come back from that. Let's talk about the fact that Power Rangers issue number 25, War is Coming.
War is Coming.
Thank you.
Sorry, I forgot we were recording for a second. That was just a normal response for me.
Thank you, Mr. Voiceover.
I mean,
in a world in which the Power Rangers are here to defend the universe, war is coming.
I just think of, like, the 90s Power Rangers in that voice, and it's just not... It wants to click so bad, it's like, no! So, I'm hoping by now people have read Power Rangers, because I'm pretty sure, at least the original one, this is just a regular Power Rangers issue, not...
It's Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
It is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. So, this isn't coming out till 2018, but they're already talking about this new story arc where Lord Drakon, which I think is what his name is, it's basically an older, evil version of Tommy Oliver in another universe. They've already fought him once, and Tommy fought him once already, which was weird because it was weird. but he's definitely set to come back. I'm pretty sure just from reading the issues you can tell that it's like, this isn't over. Boom Studios, who does Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, they haven't even revealed their creative team yet for this arc, but it was said that the last clash that they did have with this older evil Tommy will have its, like, backlashes on that team. So I'm pretty interested to see what that is, because of course when you started out in those comics originally, everybody was kind of standoffish from Tommy because of the fact that he's not Zordon didn't give him his power coin.
Right,
and you can kind of see how he battles that every day too, which I find super interesting. So if you haven't read it, go get the trades and read it, because it's worth your time.
It's a great series.
It really is.
Sorely underrated for.
Oh yeah.
For a concept, they definitely they got a writer who loves Power Rangers.
Oh, definitely, and
you can tell.
It's definitely not you know your 90s Power Rangers either. So no. That's kind of one of those things where you should definitely be, you know, it's got the characters have more feel to them. They're not just a character.
Yeah.
They're more in depth. So honestly, I would say try and get through as many as you can before this war is coming.
Right.
One shows up, because I'm hoping it's going to be great. And so far, all of them have been great, so I can't see it not being good by any means.
That's exciting. I really like, yeah. just the idea of a big epic event coming out of the Power Rangers book sounds really cool.
Right. So. Just explosions and Megazords everywhere.
Explosions of Megazords. I'm weird into the sound effects today. Patrick, what else do you have for us today?
Yeah. Well, I have a bit of news about my man, Ta-Nehisi Coates. He's going to be writing a new Storm solo series with artist Jen Bartel. So that should be extremely interesting to see that creative team on a title like Storm. Ta-Nehisi's just killing it recently. I mean, like, ever since he started doing things, he's been killing it.
He's like, I breathed and I killed it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, one could argue that he is the destroyer, like, in how much he kills it.
Oh my god. He is the alpha and the omega.
Yeah. So, coming out with, obviously, the Storm solo series. I haven't seen anything on a specific release date for that yet.
No, it was just an announcement. Just the base announcement. I think this sounds great. We were looking at some art before recording, and Jen Bartel?
Yeah, Jen Bartel.
Looks amazing. She has an 80s Storm pinup in her online gallery that looked just fantastic. And it's Mohawk Storm.
That I want this tattooed on my body. Why are you saying that?
Mohawk Storm for the win, based on Ta-Nehisi's version of Storm in Black Panther and the Crew. We can assume that we're going to get Mohawk Storm, right?
Yeah, I think he's trying to. What I got from that is basically he's like, oh, you don't want the crew? Oh, sorry, is that too many black people in one comic for you? We'll dial it back down to just one, you know, and that should be fine.
Wow.
That's basically
making statements.
Well, yeah, I mean, we can get into a whole thing about that, but, you know.
Sideline.
That's at least what I got for that. So he's coming out with that in a couple months here. Or a month or so, he should be releasing his new, like, book too, so.
Oh, cool.
He's just writing up a storm out there. Like, I honestly don't know how much, I didn't even mean that. I honestly don't know, like, what he does in his free time aside, because he's, you know, writes for, like, two Marvel titles, writes for The Atlantic, and in his free time, he just writes books.
Yeah, you know.
So, like,
I mean, I feel like right now he's actually winning right now in comparison to my free time.
I think he's just winning at life is what it sounds like.
I think he is. So I'm super excited. I've seen him on a bunch of like news things and late night shows recently. Cause he doesn't do that many interviews, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever actually heard him talk.
Yeah. So. He was on The Late Show the other night.
Really?
Actually, with Stephen Colbert. Yeah. Nice. He had a really good, interesting interview about, I mean, goddamn, all of his interviews are interesting. He's one of those people that just, like, pulls out, like, words that you have to Google search, like, as just, like,
Patrick's
a normal
just watching
conversation.
The late night show bowing.
Right.
Yeah, well, like,
every time I
listen to him talk, I have to have, like, a Google tab open just to, like, look up the words he uses that he just, like, uses off the cuff. You know, he's talking about, like, whiteness as a phenotype, and I was just like, okay.
Don't mind the keys clacking.
Yeah. So, Storm Series, new book, We Were 8 Years in Power is the title of it.
We Were 8 Years in Power?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that was the title.
: An American Tragedy. So.
This is his book or the Storm
book?
That's
the book.
Okay.
Yeah. So, lots of stuff coming out. I don't know. Segued from Storm into just Ta-Nehisi Coates.
I'm still waiting for the announcement that he, is in Black Panther the movie.
Oh my god. didn't we talk about that like two podcasts
We did.
Ago?
I really think that that's gonna happen. That seems like it has to happen.
just in the background, yeah, on like his laptop.
Red yeah, Lapper, exactly.
Writing he can family it.
Some digital,
yeah, exactly.
Yes.
I can totally see him like just in a coffee shop, like writing for the Wakandan or something.
Random segue. How do they fit Stan Lee's cameo into Black Panther?
That is a good ass question. I didn't even think about that.
Unless they're in a zoo and they're like, the one white person in our village.
Oh, yeah, maybe like they're like at the Wakandan airport or something. Like,
oh, there you go. That'll work.
And he's coming in like, why do you have maybe to search my bag or something?
Yeah,
like that.
Something in customs or something. Yeah, okay. That's doable. Oh, man.
Yeah, no, I didn't even think about that. Certainly, also, please do not do blackface, but that's just throwing that out there.
Oh my god, I'm pretty sure he knows better.
No,
like, I'm pretty sure.
Well, if it's, there was rumors that James Gunn had recorded a bunch of Stanley cameos for him. So, maybe it's one of those. So, let's hope that James Gunn had enough sense to not do something like that.
I'm pretty sure, like, Stanley would be like, maybe we should do this. he's in a tiger costume for some reason.
I imagine him in, like, super traditional Wakandan, like, garb, like...
That would be really badass, actually. Like, I just seeing Stan Lee, like, just looking like a total BA and, like, the white colors and, like, yeah, that sounds awesome.
With, like, one of the, like, little caps.
Yeah.
I forget, like, the... Anyway.
We're on the verge of being, like... We're on the verge of crossing a line. Yeah, so, did you guys see some new trailers that got released this past week? There's been a bunch, actually.
I have, like, honestly,
I heard about them
paid attention to none of them.
Wow. So we had a new Star Wars trailer, a new Justice League trailer.
Going in blind.
Also don't care.
And then the first trailer for the New Mutants was released yesterday, Friday the 13th.
Put me anywhere near X-Men. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. Yeah. I don't want to participate
anymore.
Oh
my gosh.
I kind of don't care.
So I'm going to say they're all great. Why should you care? It is X-Men as a horror film. So what would happen if you trap all of the new mutants who are discovering their powers in a mad scientist's office and hospital, and they all get experimented on while trying to figure out if they are a detriment to society? So it's a haunted house movie, essentially.
How are you getting heavy, man?
It's based on, actually, the Chris Claremont and Bill Sienkiewicz run called The Demon Bear. So
like, that made my heart sink a little bit.
It is a fantastic trailer. I'll just do a quick hit. Star Wars trailer, amazing. Justice League trailer, sets the tone. I'm glad it's going to be a happy movie. The New Mutants trailer looks great.
Like how most of those guys like, all right, yes!
It was. I didn't expect something like this. I had heard that they were going the horror route, and to see the trailer be done so lovingly and like kind of like it's paced awkwardly, and you don't really get to see the kids' powers yet, which is really cool. So they're like teasing the horrors that happen from them using their powers. Like Cannonball is staring at a it looks like a series of washing machines. I don't actually know what they are. Mm-hmm. And he goes really close to one, and inside of it a hand slaps the glass and flames just everywhere, which Cannonball basically flames his legs and can fly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's this, you know, the image of fire as fear for him, for what he's becoming. Maisie Williams is playing Wolfsbane, so she's a superpower werewolf. So it's
I like werewolves.
Isn't werewolf already the superpower?
Pretty much. Yeah. But, you know, it's Arya Stark as a werewolf. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So that's pretty
good. I like werewolves.
Yeah, check out the trailer if you haven't already. It's a short one, too. It's the first teaser, essentially, for a movie that's coming out in April of 2018. So.
Oh, it's a movie?
Oh, yeah, New Mutants is it's a movie.
For some reason, I thought it was going to be a TV show, but
yeah,
I guess not. I was thinking of the New Warriors.
That's the Squirrel Girl show.
Mm-hmm. Starring other people, I guess.
Nah, it's Squirrel Girl. it's they can't market Squirrel Girl by herself as a film, so they're throwing her as the main character in a team book. It's fine. Team series, not team book.
Yeah.
She has her own comic book, and it's fantastic.
I was gonna say, I feel
and
like
it's an
you
Eisner
should
winning
know.
Yeah, exactly.
What else do you have for us, Kat?
Round two of some comic book news. Apparently DCU is reviving Milestone. So just kind of quick blurb about that. I guess they're bringing back like Static Shock.
Static Shock. Static
oh, dude,
Shock.
That's like one
Tom
of my favorite
Strong,
TV shows of all
Icon
time.
And Rocket, to name a couple.
Yes.
So, it seems like they're reviving some 90s stuff, which sounds about right. so for a time.
Dennis Cowan might be on Static Shock, and I'm like chomping at the bit to hear the official like creative team announcements because I want a good Static Shock book so bad.
There's not a whole lot of information. Is there anything? They're like, here's. From what the article that I read and everything, it was like, here's some pictures and some stuff, and I'm like, cool, yeah. I guess. Static Shock showing back up. Me.
Other than Static Shock, which is objectively awesome, I was going to ask why should I care about any of these? I care about all of them now because Static Shock was thrown
well,
in there.
Well, Milestone is like a was based around.
They're on correctly, they were their own media company.
Yeah, and it was African American superheroes. That was what Milestone was.
And then of course, they're saying too from the little bits that I read that they're going to include some of them in Justice League 2. So there might be even more characters that show up and we won't know until they just hey, what up?
Throw Static Shock on the Titans and that would be just, that's a perfect fit as far as I'm concerned. And I'd say,
ping Damian with his little overboard.
I wouldn't even put him on Teen Titans. I would put him with the
Oh no, this is just a personal wish.
Okay, that's fair. But I would put him alongside Nightwing and Donna Troy and
it depends what age you're gonna make him.
Has he been in anything in a while?
It's been a long time. He had a series in the beginning
probably
of the New 52.
Right.
And it didn't go anywhere. I don't think they put the right team on that book to really let it sing.
Said, it depends how old they're going to make him, though.
I would hope that they do something 17, 18, mm-hmm. so he's a little bit in the middle range of the
I feel like
book.
That's definitely a good age for him. Yeah.
Maybe put him on his way out of high school and having to deal with the college culture.
Yeah.
So...
I feel like his story is definitely a coming of age type story, but also.
Well, and I'd like to see him grow into one of the big heroes to be somebody alongside Justice League,
I feel like he's been edging way towards his invention.
We take out Cyborg and you put him back with the Teen Titans so he can be with Beast Boy again, and then Static can replace him. That sounds really bad.
I actually
bad.
Really don't like that. Or, I mean, I really like that idea. I don't hate that. That sounds really cool to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would rather that.
Because, of course, you wouldn't be able to have Static and Cyborg on the same team, because heaven forbid that you have two African main characters.
That's
on
why
the
I
same
said that sounded
title.
Bad. My biggest thing was I wanted to go back to Beast Boy. That's all I care about.
No, I think
no, I totally. I'm just giving shit to, major media publication in general. Not just you.
I just wanted to slam my face once it came out of my mouth. I was that's not how
it
I
was.
It
was funny. I didn't even think about it that way. I thought it was you replace a Titan with a new Titan. And
yes!
Right
that's what I was going for. And then I can't have more than two. I was of course you got to take off. Not how I meant it, I swear.
You know what? Static is actually going to be part of the new Young Justice season, too, because he was actually in... Virgil was in Young Justice. He was one of the
second season.
Yeah, the team that was...
Yeah.
Created or taken.
The kids from New Mexico or whatever that was in it. Yeah. No, that was actually super tight.
Now I just want to watch cartoons. I'm all about
I've watched the Static Shock series probably three times. Four
way
times all
ahead
the way
of
through.
His time. That was another one with Batman the Animated Series.
It did the crazy thing about it is it had the classic 90s after the show yo, let me talk to you about it's
being
classic
a bastard.
Don't skip school or make sure you respect your parents. But Static Shock was it had after the things it was like. It was yo, let me talk to you about gun violence. I was holy shit.
Right, as a kid that didn't make any sense, but it's wow.
And now watching it, I'm Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And it does not beat around the bush either, his series, with Cyborg a lot is kind of subtly he's black and there's racism, but in the Static Shock series, there's a whole episode where he meets his parents.
The only way you can tell that he's human is this part thing of his face.
Cyborg?
And let's be honest, you're not staring at his face. You're what the hell? What is... you're staring at the red eye that's staring back at you.
Anyway, so, super sidetrack. But you got other news for us?
No, I'm mostly good. I'm pretty sure that there's one thing that we are all super excited to talk about, though, and that's the new Blade Runner movie.
Yeah, so let's we're gonna roll right into the review for Blade Runner 2049.
I feel like backstory wise, Nat and Patrick have both seen the original. I have never seen the original one, so we played a game of, have you seen the original? No. You should go see it, and then we'll talk about it.
Right.
Okay.
So I want to say in advance that we are going to spoil things. If you have not seen Blade Runner 2049, pause the podcast, scroll about 20 minutes ahead-ish, and then see where we're at, because we are...
Oh, cool.
Definitely, we can't not talk about spoilers with this movie. There's spoilers within the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So,
To talk about anything significant in this movie, like, even, like, I'm over here, like, you know, I'm probably gonna talk about, like, thematic arcs and, like, analogies and, like, stuff like that. But, like, to talk about that, I need to spoil major plot points in the movie.
Yeah, this
is
so...
I will dumb it down for all of you, because I'm not that... I'm not that great.
So I'm going to do a 10-second count here.
What are you counting?
So we're going to start talking about Blade Runner 2049. With spoilers right now. Okay! So...
Everybody go!
Yeah. Blade Runner, the original favorite movie of all time. Super did not want a sequel. And got a sequel and went, holy shit, the MacGuffin in this movie was not what I was expecting at all. They portray it as being a movie that was going to be about Harrison Ford's character Deckard, and like Deckard.
Oh, you mean the fact that, like, I'm like, where's Harrison Ford? The entire movie, and they're like, here he is for 40 minutes.
He's not the MacGuffin. The MacGuffin of the damn movie is the fact that he and Rachel had a fucking child somehow. So that replicants can have kids. Well, and there's the other plot point that's really interesting. And I'll actually ask Kat, is Deckard a replicant?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure he is.
So one of the things that I was afraid of when somebody says to me there's going to be a Blade Runner sequel is, oh great, you're going to answer the question and you're going to reveal that Deckard was a human. That was what I didn't want. I don't want a clear-cut answer that he was human. I'd have been okay with a clear-cut answer that he was a replicant, but I didn't want a clear-cut answer that he was human, and they didn't give it to us. They made it ambiguous.
And I think the whole thing about, like, replicants versus humans is summed up perfectly when Ryan Gosling's character, Kay, I guess we can call him, talks about... I don't want to call him Joe.
I know, that's really weird, man.
My heart broke a little bit
when he asked Harrison Ford's character, is the dog real? And he responds, what does he say? It's like, I don't know.
Why don't you go ask him?
I don't know. Why don't you ask him? I think that can basically sum up, like, what is real in that movie. The only person, after watching that movie, I realized the only person we know for a fact is a human was Jared Leto's character.
Wallace. Neander Wallace is the only one we know.
The head of the Wallace Corporation, which took over the place of the Tyrell Corporation, making the replicants, which also, let's talk quickly about the God versus man sort of themes that were brought up in the movie, created.
Considering, like, the entire time, I'm pretty sure, like, yeah, Wallace was using all these God metaphors, but I'm pretty sure he was talking about himself.
Well, he refers to his creations as angels.
Yeah.
Not only does he actually, like, talk like that, but also one of the most amazing parts about this movie is just the cinematography alone. And the filming of the Wallace headquarters looks like a pagan temple.
Yeah.
They have the music in the background, like the throat singing, and, like, it's just gold with, like, staircases and all this stuff.
Well, and the replicants in the glass cases are glowing pale white.
Yeah.
Like they're angel creatures.
That entire moment in that entire movie was, like, completely and utterly horrifying for me, and I'm like, you're putting human... Wait, they're not humans, but they look... They act...
So something that I didn't really think about when I watched the first movie, which you haven't seen, I always I guess I superimposed my own thoughts into what the replicants were underneath the skin. Mm. And I sort of assumed that they were very similar to, like, Terminators, where, you know, like, mm-hmm. a metal skeleton.
But that's the insane part, is you find out in that movie that, they're
genetic replications of humanity. Yeah. They have muscle tissue and bone, mm-hmm. and...
They even built that up, like, in the new movie. Like, yeah, I assume they were closer to androids.
Mm-hmm.
But really, like, after we were looking at the skeleton of,
Rachel.
Quote, Rachel, we're not actually entirely sure that it is Rachel, too. I mean, like, we can assume, but, like, sorry, the whole movie just makes you question everything about everything.
But honestly, the biggest question you have, like, coming out of the movie is, what is real? So just leave that there. Everybody knows
they're
that
more, yeah, they're more, like, genetically modified humans than robots.
Yeah.
Which makes the whole, like, I know, like, in the first movie especially, that makes the whole, like, retirement of the replicants, you know, that's a big question. But, like, looking back on it now, it's, like, even more so. Just, I can't imagine. God damn.
Yeah, the movie is, it's heady.
Well,
it's
the thing, like, is like, the entire, like, I don't remember that. Like, what is it? Kay's a replicant? Really? Like, you don't think about it. I'm like, oh, no. He's like... And then he busts through a wall, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, here's something, like... And this is just talking about spoilers. You watch the trailers, and that is never an assumption. Is, oh, okay, he's a replicant. And it is revealed in the first... For me, it was revealed in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Well,
the
yeah.
The way he's, like... the way he's sleeping... So he's sleeping in his spinner going on his mission, and then all of a sudden an alarm goes off, and he does a weird shake, and he pops up, and I was like, well, that was different. Like, that didn't look like something that was a normal human way of getting up. Like, that was so, like, snap your fingers and you're up kind of scenario. Yeah. Like, it was just, like, a keyword program to say, oh, I'm awake now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, is he a replicant? And then, sure as shit, Sapper? Batista's yeah. character says, how does it feel to kill your own kind?
Yeah.
And yeah. it was like, oh, crap, he is. He's a replicant. So this whole, we're going to follow a replicant story the entire time.
Yeah. Which, like, oh, my gosh. Like, yeah, so, like, the biggest, like, question I had, aside, like I mentioned earlier, is, like, aside from Wallace, who is a replicant in the movie and who is not? Is this world that they portray, because most of the characters are replicants, yeah. basically, mm-hmm. aside from Joy, who's a hologram, but,
right. We gotta talk about Joy a little bit, too.
Yeah, so most of this thing, it's like, is this just a world that was created by humans to be replicants who are now the humans of the world? Like, there's the whole thing, like, God created man and then man killed God, like, sort mm-hmm. of idea, and now it's man creates replicants and then replicants kill man. So, like, there's this whole, like, God versus man thing happening in, like,
the thing,
human
though,
versus replicants
is
battle.
Like, they, as it was quoted, is they created these new replicants follow orders instead of the, what was it, the Nexus 8 ones. That mm-hmm.
The Nexus, it was, so the Nexus 6 are the,
it was 8.
Well, 6 are the ones from the first Blade Runner, it was mm-hmm. Nexus 6.
Okay.
7 is really not touched on. 8 was a production of the Terrell Corporation without Terrell there because he's killed.
Mm-hmm.
The 7s are actually... And I'm actually glad that I watched Blade Runner 2022 before
yes.
I went in there. Because I think those are the 7s.
Which ones?
The ones that are the main characters of 2022.
Are the 7s?
So, yeah.
Okay, so there is a generation that's in between that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they... But they, like, basically go rogue and...
Are the 7s the ones?
Way.
So there is a lot to discuss in the different models, because if you're assuming that Deckard is a replicant and we know that Rachel was, I think... Do they refer to Rachel as being a Nexus 8 in the movie? I don't remember if that was...
Yeah,
I don't think
remember.
They ever talk about what one she actually was.
Or if
I don't... And I have a feeling any of the data about Rachel 2 is false, because Rachel was sort of Terrell's experiment.
Yeah.
And so I don't think any delineation of what she is. If they two of them are any sort of generation, they're their own. they're like Nexus A and Nexus E, mm-hmm. which would be Adam and Eve, mm-hmm. was how I would sort of view that. But there's an importance to the lifespan and the memories, because six is the first type that has memories, mm-hmm. and then I believe it's seven then that has the what they refer to as the natural lifespan.
Hmm.
So, and because there was a 4-year lifespan for the Nexus 6, which yeah. then also means, and sorry, Kat, this is a little bit of spoilers for Blade Runner, is that Terrell lied. Terrell lies to Roy Batty and says, we've tried all these different things to get the longer lifespan, because that was all Roy wanted, was to live longer
yeah.
in the first movie.
Well, like, that was obviously a lie in it, because, like, it's established, like, pretty early on that they have the 4-year kill switch built in.
Basically. Well, I thought that was a degradation switch. Like, just over time, that's what happens. After four years is max, because the cells start to degrade and things start to stop working. Because that's the whole moment in the first movie. We're getting way off 2049. But in the first movie where Roy Batty's hand stops working, and he has to stab himself through the hand to kind of, like, refresh all of those nerve endings to wake it back up. Because he's slowly starting to break down. Anyway, in the new movie, Joy is an interesting character.
Oh my gosh. That was the moment for me.
As we're talking about this.
So, like, talk about, like, a world of replicants built by humans for the replicants, basically. And Joy is everything you want to see. Everything you want to hear. Oh my god, when I saw that, When he's walking, when Ryan Gosling's walking across the bridge and there's the giant hologram droid, that, like, advertisement that comes down, that for me was the moment in the movie where I was like, holy shit!
Yeah, there's this mind-blowing idea of the levels of artificial, like, what mm-hmm. is truly life, what is truly artificial. And Joy's a very strange character for me, because as you watch the movie, it's pretty easy to tell that they wrote and directed Joy to be a character that you as a viewer fall for.
Yeah.
You fall for her relationship with Kay. She's so sincere and endearing, and she's so beautiful and sweet, and she just tries so hard, and mm-hmm. you feel like her motivations when she gets angry or she starts to emote, it's because it's all, let's do the right thing, let's do it for Kay. And then you leave the theater and go, oh shit, I was played.
Yeah.
This is something that was literally fed to me to enjoy. She is completely without free will. All she can do is serve Kay.
Yeah.
And each version of Joy serves whoever, whatever Joe she's got.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a table flip right now.
It's a terrible thought, isn't it? It wrenches you a little bit to think about that. Like,
well, that's because, like, when she oh, sorry.
Like, even when I was watching that entire movie, I was like, what's worse? Giving them emotions so they can feel and be more human, or not letting them feel at all, or, like, you know, having given them these emotions and then make them commit atrocities in your name,
yeah.
or not let them feel at all. I was like, why am I thinking about this? Yeah. It was just, like, so painful.
So it's like she can only feel in the sense that it's whatever is a benefit to Kay.
Yeah, because, like, the actual, like, what
a new computer. I, like, really don't want to ruin it.
She could tell at the time when she, quote, gave him a name, you know, like, he was in this sort of, like, place where he needed that, and, like, then her programming kicked in, and, you know,
she gave him a name.
What about the name Joe? I really like the name Joe. And you're like, oh my gosh, that's so sweet. Like, not the best name ever, but, you know, like,
yep.
What, like, why not? And so, like, the fact that he latches onto that name too on an emotional level, and when Deckard asks him his name later on, he says, you know, K whatever,
dash 1-2 blah,
and he's like, no, what's your actual name? And he's like, well, Joe. And then,
yeah, so it,
like,
becomes a part of him.
Yeah, and then later on, when the giant hologram leans down and says, aren't you a good Joe?
Ugh.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that hurts. It hurts.
It does.
So, I think
like, a quick thing about this, like, the only thing I've been seeing online is how this movie did not reach the box office level that people were expecting it to, So I've seen a couple articles about how they're like, oh, I guess Blade Runner's not going to be the new next movie, like, big movie franchise. Everything that is that is missing the point. That whole line of reasoning is missing the entire point of the movie and, like, everything about it. If you go in there expecting the big summer, like, box office hit, you will be disappointed.
Yeah. I honestly walked in there not knowing what to think.
Yeah.
And coming out of it, I'm like,
I think
that was amazing.
I think that's the best way. If you've seen the original, you should definitely watch this.
Yeah.
If you know nothing about it, you should watch this.
Yeah, just still go watch it. Like, I haven't seen anything Blade Runner at all. And I walked in there and I was like, la 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 la. Oh my God. Yeah, I walk in there, la 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 la. Come out and I'm like,
yeah,
questioning my existence as a human being. That was a heavy two hours.
I can totally see that. Just like, you know, like happy, like cat walking into the theater, like, oh, we're gonna see a sci-fi movie with robots and,
right,
you know, detectives, like, solving mysteries.
Yeah, right.
And then, like, it just cuts to you, like, two hours and 45 minutes later, walking out of the theater, just like all dead eyed and like hunched over.
You just
and,
hear
like,
me mumbling, what's real?
Yeah.
I did have a question for you, Kat. What was your opinion on the portrayal of women in the film? Because I've seen a lot of negativity towards this.
What do you mean, like, negativity? Like,
well, Joy being basically subservient to Kay, love.
That's honestly, looking at it this way, that is basically then, like, the thing that stuck out to me is that first thing she shows up is that 1950s housewife. I'm like, that right there in American society is what every man wants out of a woman from them, is subservient to me, do as I will, you know, do as I want you to, stuff like that. So the fact that she first came out as a 1950s housewife, I was like, that's like a bat to the face. If you don't see that, I'm going
to
hit you.
So do you think it was like supposed to be subversive, that it's like the portrayal is in a specific way to make you as an audience viewer feel uncomfortable? And really,
I personally think it was, because you could just go to the scene where he births the, the replicant, and it's a female,
mm-hmm,
and he gets pissed off at her because she can't have children.
Yeah.
And, like, in this world, like, if you're a woman who can't have children, you're kind of seen as kind of, like, not... Everybody's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Not asking if, hey, do you ever want children?
Right.
Stuff like that. It's, oh, I'm so sorry you can't have kids, because my life is all about being, you know, I'm going to have children because that's what I'm supposed to do, because lady parts. No. And that's kind of, like, I don't think... Like, if people are getting mad about it, I'm like, no, that's him showing you, like, this is what it is, and this is how women are still seen sometimes. And if we don't change our idea of ways of thinking, then in 2049, this is what you get, kind of deal. So it's kind of like, the fact that people are angry about it, I'm like, he's not doing that in my opinion, it's not being done to be like, oh, well, that's a bullshit way to look at you. No, he's doing that because... Just think about it. Like, when you go up to a girl and she tells you, I can't have children, what's your first, oh, I'm so sorry. Not asking, oh, did you ever want children? Stuff like that. And it's just like, he basically birthed her to kill her and throw her away. And that's kind of...
That's such a rough moment.
It is. It, like, then the thing is, it's exactly, like, he talks, like, to me, as a female, watching that entire scene, I'm like, he basically, what he wants to do... And this is where my mind went, is like, basically for the rest of that replicant's life, whatever one can have children, all he wants to do is basically rape her until she dies so he can continue a manufacture of replicants.
See, and this is why I asked you the question, because I didn't think about that particular thing.
That was the whole thing, is he basically to worry about synthesizing them anymore. He would spend his days, he could have any guy walk in there and be like, hey, you want to hit that? Okay, cool, make sure you don't wear a condom. That's basically what it would be for the rest of her life. And I'm just sitting there in the theater thinking about this, and I'm like,
Yeah, that was that, man, now I really hate Wallace. Like in the movie, I was sort of weirdly indifferent to that character because he's the I am essentially, I am God archetype.
He definitely has a God complex.
But he's portrayed as a robot, like, which I thought was very interesting, was the fact that his acting style made him very robotic amongst a movie of a bunch of replicants.
Yeah.
He was the least human in his emotional state.
Yeah.
So, but now I hate him. Like, now he feels like a villain. I never thought of that.
And that was the biggest thing that I took from that, is he was so frustrated and he wanted to find this specimen, which of course was another human being based. In my mind, it was like another human being. I'm like, and that's the thing too, is it kind of makes you question what makes a human.
Yeah.
Like, is it, is this replicant now a human because it was birthed, or is it still a replicant?
Yeah.
But the thing was, is like, once he was taught, like, that entire scene, like, sitting there as a female watching that entire scene, it was just the most, it was degrading. And yes, it was supposed to be degrading. I know it was, but it was completely and utterly degrading the entire scene. Even with, I can never remember her name.
With love
in the background, like, watching her, watching this happen to not only another one of her kind, but another, like, a similar looking one to her. This is another female me. And he just, and love is the same thing. He basically uses her for what he needs, and she's supposed to do as he says. And that's when, you know, watching a lot of the scenes that she was in, I was like, you know, she would always have that one tear that would come down when she would commit these atrocities.
Right.
And I'm like, that was the scene in the moment in time, like, what, is it fair to give them feelings if you're just going to make them do this? Or is it horrible to live life without feelings?
Well, and how broken is love as a character when her motivation is to be the best. I mean, she, in her final sequence, is, I'm the best. Raises her arms up, back walks, I'm the best. It's like, she has her, you know, championship winning shot in the NBA and does her back walk, I just did it. I'm the shit, you know? And her motivation is to be the best of a servant. It's like, it's a powerful
the fact that he
movie.
Put a female in that spot too. I'm just like, I know what you're doing, and I know exactly what's happening right now. I'm like, you're supposed to be the best servant, and that's kind of how sometimes society sees me, is I'm supposed to be the best servant. And I'm like, no, I'm not.
I love this movie so much, and it's like, I love it more after talking about it. But we are running a little long, so any final thoughts then,
Patrick? Amazing. Like, honestly, like, aside from the amazing themes, metaphors, everything about it, acting, dialogue, all those
cinematography.
Yeah. I could watch
soundtrack.
I could watch this movie for 2.5 hours, 2 hours 45 minutes on mute and just stare at the beautiful, beautiful
pictures.
Pretty
sure if I just watched it without sound, I feel like I would cry more.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Every shot is so meticulously beautiful in what it's trying to do. Even how desolate it is.
Yeah.
Is absolutely gorgeous. 100%. There's parts of it where I was just like looking at the screen and I was like, oh yeah, there's stuff going on. Like,
right.
It's not just
I'm not just looking at a moving painting right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly. So I had to like snap myself back into like actually paying attention. Like, oh yeah, there's like super heavy ideas about what it means to be human and do we actually exist?
Yeah.
Going on.
And how do we view other people in our lives? And are we terrible people? Yeah, we are. That's certainly
I kind of walked out of there thinking that I'm like, we're awful human beings. And I kind of kept walking and then I kind of thought, and then I would, like, flashback. I'm pretty sure that scene where she's birthed and then he, like, cuts her right, basically, I think he's right in the area of her uterus.
Yeah.
Like, when he does that, that, to me, like, as a girl, as a female, as a woman, like, shook me to my core.
Yeah.
Like, it was the most painful thing. I'm like, the reason you don't like her is because she can't have like, it just hurt.
Yeah, that's a... So, any other final thoughts past that?
If you haven't seen Blade Runner, the original one, it doesn't matter. Just go see the movie. Like, it really... Like, they do a decent... Like, I know if I had seen the original one, there were things I'd be like, but you know, since I didn't, I know that I missed those little things that, of course, the people have originally seen it. Like, I know, I'm pretty sure they used original sound bites and everything.
Mm-hmm. That's really the only...
Rachel coming back to get shot in the head in the background of a sequence.
You even watched her brains blow out of the side of her head.
That was rough.
Oh, yeah, and I forgot to mention this earlier, talking about, like God metaphors and stuff. Rachel... is the name of Noah's wife in the Bible. She is the first person to have a baby after the Great Flood in the Old Testament.
This movie is
amazing.
So, talk about a book club moment, but a book club moment. Right? Jeez.
So
I guess my final thoughts, I went into this movie not particularly wanting a sequel to Blade Runner, and may have come out with a film that is better than the first. It's hard to argue. There's a specific sequence that I look at as like as an artist, and it's the lighting in a late moment fight sequence that has water, and all of the lighting is from vehicles. They're all the headlights or the interiors of the shot. God. Yeah. And it is literally one of the most beautiful things that I have ever seen. And I recommend this movie to anybody who likes good, hard science fiction. And
even if you don't like science fiction, because I'm not normally a person who likes that stuff. And it was just, like, you guys are like, okay, go see Blade Runner. I'm like, great, I'm going to do, like, freaking robots and bullcrap. So happy about this. It's fine. It's cool. And then I went and saw it, and I was like, this was amazing, and I should shut my mouth and never talk again.
And if you're complaining about going to a movie for 2 hours and 45 minutes, you just spent $20. Enjoy it. Sit down. Enjoy that moment.
I was exhausted, and I was just like, the only reason I was checking the time is I'm like, I am not sleeping tonight. But I was like, this is so worth it, still not sleeping.
So that is, like, that's also one of the reasons that it's not getting the box office sensation that a lot of people would, because it is a 2 hour and 45 minute movie. It is not for the casual moviegoer.
No.
If you want to go, like I was saying earlier, if you want to go in there for, like, the big box office thing, then this movie is not for you.
I don't care. You should still see it. You should.
Go see it.
If you're listening to this podcast,
you should go see Blade Runner 2049. Fair enough.
You know, everybody else, whatever. Don't care about you.
Pretty much.
All right. So with that, we're going to do one sort of quick group. Not quick. We're going to do a group comic review. So we are going to hit DC Comics... Batman White Knight, written and illustrated by Sean Murphy with colors by Matt Hollingsworth. This was Batman White Knight issue number 1, and I'll sit back and let you guys talk first, because I've been on this train for a long time.
You told me about it. I was stoked, so
I was a little skeptical, actually, when you first were talking about it a while back, when they first, because I remember you mentioned it, like, when it was first announced, then, like, when preview art came out. And honestly, I was a little skeptical, because you were like, oh, like, the Joker's going to be a politician and the good guy. And I was like, oh, like, that's so easy to, like, reverse in, like, the ideas of, like, the villain these days, like, as a politician. Like, they seem like good people, blah, 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 all that stuff. And then, like, actually reading this... Like, the scenes that struck me the most was how brutal they are about, like, modern day, sociological sort of, quote, norms, you know? I feel like police brutality has almost become, like, a norm these days. And to see, and, like, especially Batman, who goes around just beating the shit out of people who are, quote, villains, you know, is, like, almost reminiscent in a way of, like, classic, like, if you, like, put into the light of this book, it's almost reminiscent of, like, the Rodney King, like, beatings, or, like, that video that went viral, or all the other ones that happened. Batman is just beating the shit out of Joker, who has literally done nothing more than broke out of prison. Like, which is a crime, yes.
Right.
I'll give you that. But does it merit being hospitalized due to basically police brutality for that crime. I don't know. That whole sequence just really, it's really heavy, really heady. All those rhyming words.
Heavy, heady.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you're talking about that, and like the one thing, the one page that kind of that's kind of stuck with me is like his flashback when he's kind of freaking out about things, and you see Harley in it, and the like bleeding heart and the gun that she pops out. That's like, you know, his normal trick gun, and it says, "Why don't you love me?" And I'm like,
yeah,
like this thing. Like, yeah, it has all those bits to it about the police brutality and everything, but it just made me stop and think, is Batman really a hero? Is he really that guy that we all think he is? I mean, in this one, he's a little more of a loose cannon, if I may say so myself. Because, I mean, you've got Barbara and Dick, like, saying, hey, what are you doing? You're going to hurt somebody to catch one guy. How is it worth it? To do that, and it kind of made me question, is he really a good guy? But I'm like, then again, in this one, like I said, he's a little bit more of a loose cannon and everything.
He's not too off from his normal self, though. Like, he's not entirely a different Batman. Like, this is basically like the archetype of what Batman is in certain situations.
I feel like what was done here by Sean Murphy, especially in the first few pages, was he uses images that are familiar to us from the pop culture versions of Batman. So not necessarily what we see in the comics, but like what the cultural zeitgeist of what Batman is. He's riding on rooftops. He's running the Batmobile through people. These are, you know, the film images of the character. So what we're used to, you know, a casual viewer is used to seeing. And if you stop and think about it, going, you know, there's probably people in those houses that he's riding on top of. He almost killed a cop by running right through him. You know, that there's a level of reckless endangerment that's just inherent in the way that the character operates that you don't think about because you're in the action. But when it's highlighted to you as, you know, a motivating factor of this brutality, it's really interesting to see what he played with, because he's not making Batman the villain. But he's just highlighting the fact that what Batman does is fairly villainous.
He's basically shining a light on things that we blatantly ignore all the time. And I also like to point out, because I just realized this, it totally says 1 of 8. I thought it was supposed to be 1 of 7.
The pre-order numbers were so high for issue 1 that DC Comics basically went to Sean Murphy and said, so do you want to split a couple of those issues, extend them out a little bit, and we'll give you an 8th?
I mean, hey, I wouldn't turn that down either. I'm cool for 8 too. I was just like, oh, wait a minute.
Oh, I didn't know it was a limited series, actually.
Yep. It's
That totally makes sense, honestly, though. Like, the story being told here is not something I see DC Comics wanting to continue indefinitely.
Right, but at the same time, adding an 8th issue means that he can take his time a little bit. So we can have the quieter moments that I assume will try to normalize Jack.
I'm definitely hoping for like a scene where he's just eating breakfast.
Oh, he has a love making scene with Harley in one of the issues that Sean Murphy's already spoiled, and it looks like he was like crying and like head on her shoulder kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
Like, broken down half, Joker.
Definitely take half an issue just to have...
See how, like, in shock and awe my face is right now. Just kind
of... He said one of the things he wants to do with this book is to show what Harley and Joker were like, would be like going out on a date.
Yeah. I'm already in!
I mean, it's...
I can see an entire issue. I would literally read an entire issue that's dinner and a movie and then going back to the house for sex.
Yeah.
Going get it.
Literally. Legit. And this is
like, nothing, like, absolutely no dialogue or background scenes of Batman or anything.
Just like a 10
page. Oh, are you enjoying the Chardonnay?
Right.
I imagine Joker as a red wine person.
Yeah, that's true. And Harley is getting a beer.
White wine.
No, Harley's grabbing a beer.
Okay,
I think even in like a fancy setting, she's gonna get like just a top shelf beer. You know, just, she's gonna be like a craft brew.
speaking of the fact that she's actually gonna show up, it makes this page with her and the, you know, like the bleeding heart and the gun that says, "Why don't you love me?"
Harley's in this issue. Who's recording the pills being shoved down Jack's throat?
Is that her? I don't even I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I didn't actually realize that.
The
until,
whole thing
until a
is
later.
Is a, it's a plot. I mean, Joker set this up because he knew where he was going. Now, did he intend to take all the pills like that? I don't think so. But I think he knew where he was headed.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, I guess you're right.
So that's the other thing, is, like, we live in this YouTube culture, and we live in, you know, where people are recording these events, and you get snippets of it, and who we assume is Harley is recording this brutality for the world to see.
Well, I mean, it's just, like, watching this, it's like, you see, like, I think, you know, obviously this is all in his head, and, like, the fact that she's a part of this, it's like, oh my god, the dude grew conscience.
Yeah. Well, and what I really love about that page, the why don't you love me?
Yeah.
Is that Harley talking to Joker, or is that Joker talking to Batman in his own head?
Oh, you're right. That's totally right, because that entire... I remember reading that entire scene, and I'm like, dude, are you in love... What, are you insane? Are you in love with him? Like, what the hell? And he's talking about all of this, and he's like...
Hey, remember, in the Joker's mind, he's constantly helping Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the ultimate foil. He keeps him doing what he's supposed to be doing. He keeps him on the right path, and he thinks that all the other people around Batman are stupid because they make him weak.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's really weird, and the idea of reformation of the Joker is a really strange thought. It's just like, well, how does he look? And even seeing him on the cover with Harley, it's like, it's this really strange...
I didn't realize that was Harley. It was weird.
Right? You're looking at the two of them, and Joker with, you know, he's wearing a purple and green tie, and he still has the lapel flower. It's like...
Yeah, the only reason I knew it was Harley is because of the diamond cutouts on the side of her.
Right, like, exactly. Super subtle designs. Ooh. And it even looks like Joker still has, like, the permanent eyeliner. Like, even though he's the normal one, like, the way that that's sort of tacked down his eyelashes.
I do like the fact, too, that Barbara is actually taking, like, a step forward in this, too. Like... She's the one who's yelling at him, and it's not the Norm of Dick Grayson.
No.
It's her, like, what the hell are you doing?
The only reason Dick Grayson is there is to say, Barbara, get the hell out. Why are you even still here?
Yeah. Like, he's just, like, kicking her out. He's like, get out!
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, how do we deal with Bruce? Dick Grayson's response, easy, you do what I did. We leave.
Yeah.
It's an escalation of the version of Batman from the animated series. It's like...
He beat the shit out of everybody.
Well, and then you think about what would happen in Batman the Animated Series if he lost all of his, like, all of the Bat family. What if they were just all went away? He slowly degrades into just having no barometer. And we see in this, one of the big MacGuffins of Batman doing what he's doing is Alfred.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he loses another father, what is he going to do with his life?
Right. Yeah.
So, but he's not out scot-free. I mean, like, this does not portray him in the picture that it should. This is definitely, you know, a breakdown of... It's a breakdown of one character with another character coming to life.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we were all pretty happy with White Knight number one.
Yeah,
I mean, I pushed this down people's throats. So the
number
fact that, like...
Number two's gonna be great.
fact that people actually enjoyed it and really felt strongly about it made me really happy.
No, yeah, no, but like, when you were talking about it, I was like, oh yeah, Nat, I know you love Batman, like, cool.
Well, you told
like,
me about
right.
this. You told me about this. He's like, oh, the Joker's gonna be the good guy. And I was like, you're like, Darren, what?
Well, I was totally on the other end of the spectrum. I was like, oh, cool, the Joker's gonna be a good guy. Can't imagine where this is going, right? Plot twist in the end, he's the bad guy the whole time. Cool, I can't wait to, like, read this totally, like, and then I picked this up and I was like, oh my god.
You're like, I need to shut my mouth.
Yeah, no, seriously.
So, you know, going back really quickly, the intro, the first, like, three pages... Our Joker driving up to Arkham in... Well, Jack, excuse me. Jack driving to Arkham in the Batmobile, and it ends with, Batman, I need your help. So there is something else, then, that's going to be part of this story down the line that's going to cause them... Batman and Jack Napier team up?
I don't even know what that's going to be
like.
How
weird
is
that as an idea?
I'm just, like, over here kind of, like... patiently waiting, petting my cat. when will this? When will there be more?
Yeah.
Art is great. Yeah. Great art, great writing.
Read it.
Awesome core concept. If you can find it, I'll try to get some second printings here at Griffin, but...
I would also, I mean, if you can't find them at Griffin's and you can't find them anywhere, I always believe you go to your retailers first, but there's also digital. Just it's worth your time. And then pick up issue number 2.
Yeah.
Unless you're reading Gwenpool.
You gotta read Gwenpool in the paper.
That's true, that's fair.
I think that's gonna be it then for issue number 12.
Heck yeah.
Alright, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.